Hi, I'm Dana Perkins, and you're listening to Switched On, the BNEF podcast. Today, Mark Taylor and I speak with Jan Olsen, who's the head of European Carbon Research. We talk to Jan about the EU Emissions Trading System, or EU ETS, and his most recent market outlook, where he tells us how and when carbon prices are likely to go over 100 euros per metric ton from the under 50 euro price they are today. We've not done a podcast about the EU ETS or the UK ETS for that matter, so this is going to serve as a bit of a primer. We're going to define a few things, explain how these markets work, and in other words, if you are a carbon trader, you likely already know this stuff, but for the rest of us, it's important we understand this unique mechanism for driving decarbonization. For those who want to know more, check out the 1H 2021 EU ETS Market Outlook or our primer on the UK Emissions Trading System. These can be found on the Bloomberg Terminal at BNEF Go or on BNEF.com or our mobile app. As a reminder, BNEF does not provide investment or strategy advice. We've got the full BNEF disclaimer at the end of the show. And now let's get started by speaking with Jan Olsen about the EU ETS. Jan, thanks for joining us today. We are here to talk about the EU emissions trading scheme and what looks like will be a rocket ship sort of price increases over the next couple of years. So let's start. Will you first explain to all of us what the EU ETS is?
Absolutely. First, just let me say thank you for inviting me here. It's a pleasure to be here. Now, the EU ETS is a cap and trade emission market. And as the name might suggest, cap and trade has two parts to it. The first part is the cap. In this case, the EU set a cap on the maximum amount of emissions that can be emitted by European industry. That cap will decline every year. The EU then distribute allowances either by auctions or they hand them out for free to hard-to-abate industries. And you need one allowance for each ton of CO2 you emit. So an allowance is a European emissions allowance. The cap decides how many emissions allowances are supplied every year to the market. And the second part of the system is trade. Now, companies, after they've got their initial allocation and auctions have taken place, companies can freely trade allowances between each other. And the idea is that companies with expensive options to reduce emissions can buy allowances from companies with cheaper form of emission reductions available to them. And that way, you have a market-based mechanisms that hopefully will drive the cheapest form of emission reductions in the system as a whole.
So these EUAs, which is what the cool kids call them, are looking to drive down emissions. Now, how much are they looking to reduce emissions by and what year? Kind of what's the objective here?
So that's a little bit unclear. Right now, the system is set up for the old EU emissions target by 2030, which is a 40% target by 2030, and the EU ETS sectors will then have to reduce emissions by 43% compared to 2005 levels. Now, we know the European Green Deal is taking place and that the updated emissions target for the EU as a whole will be 55% by 2030 instead of the 40% that it currently is. It is not yet clear how that will impact EU ETS sectors, because EU ETS sectors only covers about, let's say, just under half of emissions in the EU. We expect EU ETS sectors to have to carry more of the burden of this additional ambition. So when we run our models, we say that the cap for the EU ETS or the emissions target for EU ETS will be a 63% reduction in emissions compared to 2005 levels. And then the rest of the burden will have to be carried by non-ETS sectors, such as transport or agriculture.
Who's covered right now? Can you describe some of the EU ETS sectors?
So it's essentially all heavy manufacturing industry. So things like cement, steel, aluminium, petrochemicals, and that kind of thing. And in addition, power generations and intra-regional aviation is covered.
Jan, I understand how the policymakers fit into this. You know, they're trying to reduce carbon emissions in the EU. And I understand how the covered sectors play in as well. You know, they're on the hook for reducing their emissions or, you know, buying credits or, excuse me, EUAs to cover those emissions. But how does the financial sector work under the EU ETS?
It's different. Well, different financial actors act differently in the market for obvious reasons. First, I would say that most trading within the carbon market happens within derivatives. So that is futures or options. Financial institutions like hedge funds, banks, day traders, whatever it may be, can trade these derivatives on exchanges like ICE or EEX. And there are a lot of smart people within the financial sectors, particularly if you think about energy trading desks are really active within the carbon market. And what they will do depends on what kind of time horizon they operate in. So you have anything from day traders who just look at daily volatility. They might even just look at technicals rather than technical analysis rather than fundamental analysis in an attempt to, you know, buy the dip and sell the top, as it were. You then have institutions with longer horizon, maybe a year, maybe 2 years, who have a fundamental view on where they think the price will move in general over the next year or so. And finally, you might have institutional investors who will buy some EUAs or futures and lock them, put them in a cupboard for 4 to 5 years, and then see where the price is when that time comes. Traders are much maligned in the market. So lately we've heard that there's been a lot of traders entering the market, particularly investment funds. And that has brought a lot of extra demand, which has driven the price up maybe higher than some people have predicted.
So it drives the price up, but also potentially makes it harder for companies that are, you know, the covered sectors to get their hands on EUAs. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. It is a fair point in a way that these financial investors are pushing the price up. But you have to remember that they also play a really important role as market makers and in enhancing liquidity on the market. So price formation becomes better. And we have a live market rather than a market with trades, you know, every 30 minutes or so. So, you know, the role that they play, you could criticize it for distorting the market, but at the same time, it is important to have them there.
It would seem that the policymakers would love it, that they would drive up the price and make it harder to get the EUAs and therefore force, well, at least encourage emitters to find other ways to reduce emissions.
Well, if your end goal is emissions, but of course you could just put the cap down.
Policymakers do support financial activity within the market. That being said, there are talks around holding limits for financial institutions as we have more and more funds joining. And it could actually look like financials will become the dominant actor within the market. So there's a balance there. And you also have to think about the political side within the EU. It is clear to people in the European Commission and the European Parliament that we will need a much higher carbon price by the end of the decade for the EU to reach its ambitious emission reduction targets. That being said, it's not just about, you know, knowing that we have to get to a certain level by 2030. It is also about how fast we get there. If we say 110 euro per ton carbon price in 2030 is politically acceptable, that might not be the case for 110 euros per ton this year. So yes, the European Commission is, or the EU is happy for the financials to play in this market and to provide this extra liquidity. But there's also a limit to how high the price can go before we'll get a lot of lobbying from industrial interest groups or EU member states that might not necessarily support the carbon market as much as Western countries do.
So let's talk about that price. And what is it, as of recording today, what is the price?
Right now, last time I checked, it was something along the lines of 51 euros per ton. We've had an all-time high earlier of 56 euros per ton. So that is quite a dramatic increase from the 20 to 30 we saw last year, and certainly the 5 euros in 2017. And, you know, that's been driven by reform within the EU. So the EU ETS has been reformed several times over the last few years, and that's driven the price up.
Well, and you do this market outlook periodically where you look at what the price could be in the future, and you have a pretty good view on when you think we could reach 100 euros per ton. So when is that, and, you know, why has that timeline looked like it's gotten so much shorter?
The main reason why the timeline has got so much shorter is this updated emission reduction target for 2030. That will mean a reform that will have to lead to a reform of the EU ETS that will tighten the cap going into 2030. We can generally split our forecast down into three periods at the moment. So the next few years, we still think fuel switching will be the dominant source of emission reductions. And to have sufficient fuel switching take place, we'll need a carbon price around where we are now. So anywhere between the 40s and 60s, really. Then as we move to the mid-2020s, fuel switching will no longer be enough. And also, there won't be as much fuel switching available as coal plants close down. And that will lead to a period where renewables will dominate the emission reduction sort of picture, if you will. With renewables, I mean renewables that are on top of national targets. So we know there's going to be a lot of renewable auctions taking place in different EU member states. Well, we also think that we're going to need some merchant renewables. So that is renewables that are only supported by a power purchase agreement or just placed on the spot market itself. And then as we get past towards the end of the decade, we're going to need to see industrial decarbonization. And that's something we've never really seen in the EU ETS or really any industrial sectors. So it is unclear how that will play out, but the two most likely technologies that will be used as we see it now is either hydrogen or CCS or a mixture of the two. And to make those technologies competitive against the more traditional methodologies of manufacturing steel, cement, and that kind of thing, you're going to need a price around 100 euros per ton. And that is how we get to our forecast of above, well, 108 euros per ton by 2030.
And is this going to be gradual, or do you think we're going to see a lot of volatility between now and then?
We are going to see volatility. The EU ETS is a volatile market by its very nature. If you look at other energy commodities and compare volatility to carbon, then carbon is always higher. And that is because it's an entirely political market. And it's a, you know, it's not a, let's say, real commodity market. There's no storage of carbon per se, like you have gas storage and that kind of thing.
So that closet we put them in, it's a metaphorical closet.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So yeah, I mean, it is going to be volatile. It's not going to be an easy ride. And the EU ETS cannot do it in a vacuum. It needs supporting policies, like support for hydrogen projects that we are now seeing being announced in different EU member states. We know that there are large commercial scale hydrogen projects within the EU plan to go operational in around 2027 and then gradually ramp up to full capacity by 2030. So it is happening. And of course, it will be, if you look at the general trajectory, it will be gradual. But if you look at, you know, at whatever could happen within a year, I wouldn't be surprised to see spikes of 20 euros or a trough of 20 euros.
Now for a very short break. Stay with us.
So as we talk about price, one of the options while dealing with the carbon price is something called fuel switching. Before we get into the, you know, how the price plays out, can you explain fuel switching and how companies go about it?
Fuel switching has been the dominant form of emission reductions within the EU ETS in the past couple of years. What that means is some markets have an overcapacity within their power market. Coal is generally the cheapest fuel you can use to, or coal or lignite is generally the cheapest form of fuel you can use to generate power, but they are really emissions intensive. Gas is more expensive, but only have around half of the emissions intensity of coal. So in those markets where we have excess capacity within the power market, and we have both coal and gas plants, what will happen is for the carbon market to balance, there will be a need for some of those gas plants to take over a lot of the generation from some of those coal plants. Now, as the carbon price goes up, it will become more expensive to produce power both by coal and by gas. But because coal's emissions intensity is higher, that will be affected more. And at some point, when the carbon price gets high enough, it becomes economically cheaper to produce power with gas than coal. So you get this dynamic where gas used to be a more expensive option, but because of the carbon price, it becomes a cheaper option than coal.
Dana, I don't know about you, but I'm just really encouraged by this. It just seems like, you know, maybe I'm naive, but it seems like the EU ETS works. It's pulling carbon out of the air, right? I think in the report, it said something like 158 million tons so far, I want to say. And on its way to, I think it's at 258, I'm not sure. But anyway, it seems that as the price goes up, you know, when it's low, you just pay for it. When it goes a bit higher, you do fuel switching, then you do renewables, and then it makes sense to suck the CO2 right out of your process, your industrial process, and then add more sectors to it.
And that is why later in the show, we're also going to talk about the UK emissions trading scheme, because even though they Brexited the European Union, they want to keep the emissions trading part. It works.
It works, or at least it's working until now. And it is important to keep in mind that the EU ETS can't work alone. It needs supporting policy around it to drive the price of nascent decarbonization technologies down, particularly in the R&D phase or the pilot phase of a new technology. So it does work in the sense that it can drive fuel switching, and it can also to some degree drive renewables build. We haven't seen industrial decarbonization yet, so we don't exactly know if it will function when we get to that stage. But we believe it will, because we're already seeing these hydrogen projects coming online. And when we talk to companies, they say it is because they expect the carbon price to go up. The really important thing to keep in mind is that the 50 euros or 60 euros price we have now is an important signal to industrial companies that the market has to be taken seriously now. So it's an investment signal now to prepare for the future. If the price was 20 euros per ton this year, that signal wouldn't be as strong. And if we think about the investment cycle for these big industrial companies, we are typically talking anywhere between 5 and 15 years. So if we want to decarbonize heavy manufacturing industry within the EU by 2030, that investment decision has to happen today. And that is why the high price today is such an important signal for industrial decarbonization in the future.
It was time to get cracking.
Exactly. We're already too late. The EU should really have started yesterday, but we are where we are. And the best place to, you know what they say, the best place to start is yesterday. And failing that, let's start today.
So you mentioned reducing the cost of nascent carbon reduction technologies. I remember, you know, I used to be a CCS analyst about a decade ago, and one of the ideas back then, at least, was that they would use the proceeds for EUAs that were just, you know, purchased to fund demonstration plants. Is that still the idea, or what are the proceeds being used for?
That is still the idea. So we have this innovation fund that will support CCS projects and hydrogen projects and the like. And so one of the advantages with CCS is that you will get support from the Innovation Fund and from other sources, but you will also help a company avoid the high cost of emitting CO2. So you have essentially two income streams where if you are a company focusing purely on CCS, you could charge your customers, as it were, a price that is slightly lower than the EUA price. And then they can then sell their own EUAs to other companies and make a profit. So you have an arbitrage opportunity there. But that is only possible with support, as CCS is quite expensive still.
So you just need a price that supports it.
You need a price that supports it. And you need, like I said, support for pilot projects and the like. The encouraging thing that we're seeing now, this talk about industrial clusters. So the idea is that rather than having a few mega projects supporting the whole of EU, we start with some smaller projects supporting large industrial clusters, for example, in the south of Germany. That way you don't have to build a massive amount of infrastructure to put these projects into place, whether that be CCS or hydrogen.
So since I think we have probably a few people listening today who aren't super knowledgeable on the emissions trading schemes, both in the UK and the EU, where else in the world are these? If this is an effective mechanism, have any other countries, or I'm going to lead on this one, states that have US states who have looked at doing something similar?
Absolutely. So there are, like you said, in the United States, we have the California Quebec emissions trading systems and REGI, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. So we also know that Washington State will start a emissions trading system, I think, by 2023. We have an emissions trading system in China for the power sector and several regional systems for industrial sectors in China as well. Then we have trading systems in Korea, Kazakhstan, New Zealand, and I'm sure I forgot some. On the horizon, we also have this, Kenya has recently announced an emissions trading system, and so has Ukraine. So it is popping up several places. There are already several, but there are more coming.
Do you expect them to link?
No, I don't expect them to link. We know that the one linkage we've had within the EU ETS is the EU and the Swiss ETSs linking. They were really close in design to each other, so all of the design parameters were broadly similar, and it still took 10 years to link those two markets. So it's a difficult one, but the other one, the UK ETS will likely link with the EU ETS, but other than that, these broad international or cross-continental links are far away in the future. Hopefully we'll see them, but I wouldn't expect to see them within the next 5 years.
I love how Jan said no when you asked him if they were going to link. He's like, no, are you crazy? You could hear it in his voice. Like, obviously not.
Well, I just remember the, California and Quebec cap and trades linked, right?
Yes. I mean, it is a lot easier to link regional markets within the same continent than it is to do cross-continental linkage. It is also politically difficult because you need countries that are not necessarily on the best terms to get to an agreement of fungibility and you know, the different parameters of linking, not least conflict resolution.
So Jan, we've talked about regional expansion of carbon markets, but going back to the EU ETS just for a second, let's talk about sector expansion. In the report, you mentioned that it's likely that maritime will be included soon and aviation is looking possible. My question here is, looking at fuel switching, it seems hard for these sectors to do fuel switching and reduce emissions. Are they just going to be on the hook for just buying EUAs?
To some degree, yes. But there are ways to reduce emissions in maritime, and there are ways to reduce emissions in aviation, although it's not straightforward at all. First, what we're talking about is intra-EEA maritime. So that is only maritime transport that starts and ends within the European Economic Area. We already have intra-EEA aviation within EU ETS, and what they might want to do is expand it to international aviation, although that might be in doubt because of this new CORSIA offset scheme for international aviation. When it comes to reducing emissions, yes, these are sectors that don't have an easy access to decarbonization technologies, let's say. But we know there are electric ferries running in Norway and elsewhere. So, you know, it's not an impossible feat. The idea of expanding is that when you have a larger market, you have more effective price formation. And these markets will probably be protected by free allocation in the beginning. Two other sectors that are of interest is heating and transport. So Frans Timmermans, who is the vice president of the European Commission, in April, he said that they would start a separate ETS for heating and transport within the EU. Now, the goal is to link that ETS with the EU ETS at some point in the future, and that way you have an indirect expansion of the scope of the EU ETS.
So Jan, just to kind of bring it all home here on this, you're seeing some increasing prices on the EU ETS side. What is it that you want to watch as the UK completes now their first year with their own emissions trading scheme?
For me, the most interesting part is to see how closely the price of the UK ETS will be linked to the EU ETS. It is quite possible that we will see a link between the UK and EU ETS in the future. So for me, that suggests possible price convergence between the two markets. Another reason for price convergence is that we have a lot of UK power companies who have hedged EUAs, and they will likely unwind those hedges and buy into the UK ETS when the price is right for them. And the price would be right if there are similar prices between the two markets or if there is a premium on EUAs. So you might have a situation where you have a more expensive EU allowance than a UK allowance. Then you will have power companies taking advantage of that by selling off an EU allowance and buying a UK allowance. That way the price of the EU allowance will go down and the price of the UK allowance will go up, and we will have some convergence. So for me, that is the number one thing to look out for. The second thing to look out for is news on linking the two systems. It is unlikely that they will be linked by 2022, so probably 2023 is the earliest possible year. Now, both the EU and the UK agree that linking is advantageous for both sides. The problem is that carbon markets are not on the top of the agenda of the prime ministers of the world or the highest level of government. So it might fall victim to larger negotiations between the two parties. But hopefully we will see a link in the next couple of years.
Jan, do you have any final thoughts for us?
It's really encouraging to see the market recover from the doldrums of 2017. When the reform for 2021-30 was taking place, it really was the last chance saloon for the market. A lot of political capital had been spent on it, and it was seemingly going nowhere. This is really an example of effective policymaking and how the European Commission has learned from previous mistakes, and they should be lauded for that. We are now in a situation where EU ETS is no longer a compliance issue for large corporate entities, but it is a real strategic risk going into the future. And that is where it needs to be to drive these investment decisions. So I would say that the development of the EU ETS is a really great example of effective policymaking. People within the European Commission and in the EU as a whole really can pat themselves on the back for what's happened in the last few years.
This week's show was produced by Ava Gonzalez Isla and edited by Rex Warner of Greystoke Media.
Bloomberg NEF is a service provided by Bloomberg Finance LP and its affiliates. This recording does not constitute, nor should it be construed as, investment advice, investment recommendations, or a recommendation as to an investment or other strategy. Bloomberg NEF should not be considered as information sufficient upon which to base an investment decision. Neither Bloomberg Finance LP nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this recording, and any liability as a result of this recording is expressly disclaimed.